Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. And I said all week in advance of the release of this Adam Toledo body cam footage showing the shooting by a Chicago police officer that if what prosecutors said in court checks out, then it sounds like a appropriate use of lethal force. If what prosecutors said in court checks out. And the reason that I offer that caveat is because this is Chicago, and it is impossible to have faith in the competence and integrity of any unit of government in Chicago. And now, after the release of that video yesterday, what we find out is that that prosecutor made a material misrepresentation in court. And that's not just me saying it. It's the Cook County State's Attorney's Office saying it, saying he failed to fully inform himself before speaking in court. How does a prosecutor fail to fully inform himself before speaking in court about something as high profile and charged as this matter? It astounds me, and it's tough to astound me with respect to anything that happens in Chicago and Cook County. Here is the moment, the police chase and the confrontation with Adam Toledo.
Please stop! Stop right now! Hey, show me your f***ing hands! Stop it! Shots fired! Shots fired! Get an ambulance up here now!
Attested in court, the officer said, stop, show me your hands, drop it. But when Adam Toledo turned toward him, he had already thrown the gun behind the fence and he had his hands up.
Right. He didn't say drop it. I mean, he said, stop, right, blank and stop. Stop, show me your blank and hands.
He said, drop it.
I watched it 20 times yesterday.
Listen again.
Okay, I will listen again.
Please stop! Stop right now! Hey, show me your f***ing hands! Stop it!
Drop it.
Okay, I thought he said stop it. I didn't... What?
Shots fired! Shots fired!
Stop! Show me your hands, drop it. That's what was said. But that's a secondary issue now to the complication because of the misrepresentation in court.
Right.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
It's more, I mean, for some odd reason, let me just get through this real quick. Chicago police yesterday at about 10:30 in the morning said they wanted to preview a preview of these tapes or the shooting at police headquarters. So 17 reporters went and watched it. And what we watched was not what was released by COPPA. I mean, it was grainy. You can see two hands up in the air. But I just think that Chicago police were trying to control the message to say, you know, like this shooting was justified. But they didn't say that. They just, you know, piece by piece, frame by frame by frame, where you see him drop the gun and then he's turning at the same time. So the police officer's life was in danger. We're talking about 842 milliseconds between the time the police officer saw the gun and his weapon was fired. Do you think it was a justified shooting, Dan?
You tell me.
I've watched it so many times. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Here's for additional context, the full 9-minute body cam footage, which most people will never watch or never see, and the media won't report. But just so we understand, let's sort of set some sort of baselines here. Because, of course, these things are characterized as some sort of assassination, white cop and brown kid and so on and so forth. It's ridiculous. So after he was shot in that split second that Amy just described, this was the reaction of the police officer in real time.
Need an ambulance. Got a gunshot victim. Shots fired by the police.
By the police, man, Forrest?
Where you shot, man? Where you shot? Stay with me. Stay with me.
All right, Tempo. We'll get an ambulance rolling.
Somebody bring the medical kit now.
Okay, can someone send a medical kit, please? 24th and Sawyer, please. That one over there.
All right, I need a medical kit. Sucking chest wound to the upper chest. Got a sucking chest wound.
I got a medical kit.
Dude, hurry up.
I'm sorry, I didn't copy you.
I got a medical kit. Where'd you shot at? Right here?
Yeah, top in the chest.
Top in the chest? Give me a chest seal.
What is the
chest
seal?
Give me some gloves.
Chest seal.
Is this chest seal?
Nope.
Yeah, back, vacuum pack.
Chest seal. Chest seal.
Chest seal. Give me a chest seal. Give me a chest seal. Give me a chest seal.
Stay with me, hey. Stay with
me. Hey, stay awake. Stay awake,
put
man.
Put your chest piece, press on. I'm going to start CPR. I'm not feeling a heartbeat.
Go ahead. I'm trying as fast as I can.
I got to get this chest seal first.
As fast as I can. Try to get this chest seal open.
And that's Officer Eric Stillman from the 10th District, who clearly he was very upset. And he rushed. He didn't waste 1 second trying to help this 13-year-old.
It's just the thing that's so frustrating is the prosecutor's misrepresentation in court complicates it because it smacks of, oh, they're trying to cover up, or they're trying to obfuscate, they're trying to misdirect, and it just feeds the sort of statements you get from, well, like the Toledo family attorney, Ms. Weiss-Ortiz, who said this.
By now, all of you have seen the videos of Adam Toledo. They are especially moving, saddening, distressful to see a 13-year-old boy shot at the hands of an officer. For those of you with children, you can relate to some of the pain that the Toledos are feeling today. Those videos speak for themselves. Adam, during his last second of life, did not have a gun in his hand. The officer screamed at him, "Show me your hands." Adam complied, turned around. His hands were empty when he was shot in the chest at the hands of the officer. He did not have a gun in his hand, contrary to the reports made earlier today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the officer's attorney said, you know, prior attempts to de-escalate and gain compliance with all of the orders failed.
Well, you know, there's misrepresentations on both sides here because that what you just heard from the family attorney, of course, I mean, his last seconds and all that sophistry. Yes. And he was also out at 2:30 a.m. in the morning, and he did have a gun in his possession, and he was resisting arrest by fleeing. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more complicated. It wasn't like he was sitting on his porch reading Tolstoy and the police rolled up on him. You know, the context that's lost on both sides leads to the sort of hysteria that precludes any sort of rational discussion on these matters. It's just so frustrating.
And Bill then you, and, oh, sorry, go.
Bill and Glenn Ellen, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, I want to know at this point, where is the upside for police officers to actually pursue criminals on the street? I mean, no matter what, right. There is a chance that no matter what they do, they are going to be hung out to dry by these Democrats in these cities, and they're going to be like Chauvin's trial, you know, it's ending this week. And where is the upside to getting out of your squad car rather than waiting until the criminal has fled the scene, walk up, take the statements, get back in your car, and go on your way? I mean, at some point, the police are just going to realize, I'm not getting out of my car, because whenever I do, I'll take a risk on destroying my family, going to prison, losing my pension, and I'll just sit in my car from now on, you know?
Thanks for the call, Bill. Well, it's interesting you say that, because as part of Lori Light's offerings yesterday, and we'll get to them, But we'll get to them in detail. But part of it was her discussion of foot pursuits, and the clear indication was that she wants to effectively do away with foot pursuits.
Foot pursuits put everyone involved at risk. The officers, the person being pursued, and bystanders. We have to do better, and I charge the superintendent with bringing to me a policy that recognizes how dangerous this is.
Mm-hmm. Everything's dangerous. Car chases are dangerous. Foot pursuits are dangerous. And all, you know what else is dangerous? Gangbangers who walk around at 3 in the morning randomly shooting, because before the police shooting happened, there was a shot spotter that detected this. It's like a war zone out there. They were randomly shooting at a car, and then they took off. Well, that's what brought police to the area.
The other thing about foot pursuits in terms of people at risk, the lack of foot pursuits potentially puts the law-abiding at risk, don't they? If you're just going to let criminals run wild and essentially allow themselves to punch themselves out with whatever they're doing, and then you come clean up the mess after they victimize people. I mean, the point of having people roaming around with guns engaged in illegal activity is to stop that illegal activity before they victimize somebody or more people. I think that's the point of police responding to the scene. But, okay, we'll have to wait for Lori Lightfoot and Superintendent Brown's forthcoming offerings on foot pursuits. But clearly you know where she's going with that statement.
Yeah, and the family, you know, we had a few dozen protesters last night, so, and no arrests, so that's good. There were peaceful protests. But that's because I feel like all the professional agitators are in Minnesota right now. And it's only soon before they come down here. But their whole thing is his hands are up, don't shoot. That whole hands up, don't shoot thing.
Pete and Racine. Hey, Pete.
Good morning. Say, the number one line in all of these situations is the person they're chasing after is carrying a gun. He's carrying that gun for one reason, so if he gets stopped in the middle of what he's doing, he's going to shoot the person. That's why he's carrying a gun. So that's why the police officers need to protect themselves from the start when they're chasing a person with a gun. If I'm going fishing, I'm carrying a fishing rod. If I'm going golfing, I got my golf club. If I'm going to rob somebody, I got my gun to shoot them if they try to stop me while I'm robbing them. That's the bottom line. And the police have a right to protect themselves. And that's if he has a gun in his hand, they have a right to draw their weapon and protect themselves. They have the authority to do that.
Thanks for the call, Pete.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, and we're talking, of course, about the release of the body cam footage in the Adam Toledo shooting. Mayor Lightfoot had a press conference yesterday to talk about this, and in classic triple threat fashion, it was all about the ideology, very little about this particular case, very little about the responsible parties in this case, very soft on facts and very heavy on ideology, because you know what the problems are. Guns.
We must deal with the cancerous role of illegal firearms that plague every Chicago community.
The history of police misconduct.
We must continue to face and not ignore the fact that Chicago, as well as way too many parts of our country, has a long legacy of police violence and police misconduct that have left far too many residents, especially those who are black and brown, in a constant state of fear and pain.
Like that rhetoric does. Systemic issues.
Systemic issues that simmer beneath the surface of our city, of our society. Issues like generational poverty, disinvestment, and yes, racism.
Police misconduct, guns, racism, lack of opportunity, yep. Generational poverty. These are all the topics to discuss when you want to go root causes on the Adam Toledo shooting.
And then there's tears because she always cries when it gets hot.
We've got to do things differently to change around their fortunes. We owe it to them to do better.
We have to do things differently to change their fortunes.
Yeah, I'm used to the crocodile tears from these politicians. We saw it with Tiny Dancer. We get the same thing from Lori Lightfoot, people who've given over the city to predators, then crocodile tears when the police are involved in confronting somebody who is acting inappropriately and they make a judgment call, a close call, judgment call. Now we're going to talk systemic issues. We're going to wring our hands over illegal guns. We're going to wring our hands over criminal activity. We're going to talk about how we need to grow government to essentially take the role of the family in raising children. This against the backdrop so far this year in Chicago, 173 dead, 905 shot. But this is the opportunity to shed the crocodile tears. This is the opportunity to talk systemic issues. It's real genuine. It's real genuine. It's not political hackery at all from Triple Threat. You know what? She is increasingly presenting herself as a terrible human being, because only terrible human beings would seek to exploit their political agenda on the corpse of a 13-year-old kid. And that's what she's doing. Oh, and if...
She's a 13-year-old too, Dan.
And so what? I got a 14-year-old nephew. So what?
I'm just saying she brings it up because she knows.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's because it's sophistry, because she's a demagogue, because she's a charlatan. And she and her ilk, those who share her ideology, these Marxists, are happy to inflame racial passions, animus toward police, excuses for not complying with the law. And it's just sickening. And oh, by the way, the remedy, since we all failed, Adam, is wraparound service, whole of government approach, more money.
We have to do more to make sure that every resident has a shot at fulfilling their God-given potential. And to accomplish this mission, it is critical to provide social supports to all of our residents, especially our young people who are particularly vulnerable to violence.
Why are people, young people, particularly vulnerable to violence? What's happening in the home?
Broken homes, single moms. I mean, we haven't heard, Adam's father wasn't there for the viewing the other day. We haven't heard anything from reports that we know that he's raised by his mom.
And just to, you know, synthesize this and translate it for you, Lori Lightfoot wants government to raise your kids, to raise all kids, to especially those vulnerable to violence, where parents have failed, where the family is dysfunctional, where the kid has gone awry. This is where government steps in, and government's going to make it all right. Has government made it all right over the last 60 years since the Great Society? Actually, you could go back further than that, but certainly since the Great Society, where the welfare state was going to replace mom and dad, or I'm sorry, we don't get to say mom and dad anymore, parent, and maybe parent one and parent two, if there is a parent two, or a grandparent one and grandparent two. This is lunacy. And the sentimentality, the crocodile tears, that's going to lead. And that's what people are going to talk about. And we're all going to empathize and feel good about ourselves and do nothing about the underlying issues. While she prattles on about systemic this and systemic that and identitarian this and identitarian that. She's a disgrace. She's a terrible human being. I'm sorry.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. You know who also is a terrible, disgusting human being? Is the 21-year-old who was with him that night. A fellow gang member, 21. Because they recruit these guys because they know that if they get caught with the gun, that the laws are different for them. And here's this guy, Ruben Roman. When he got arrested, because he got tackled, as you see in the video, he's wearing a beige jacket. He gets tackled by the female officer, Stillman's partner. And then they go to talk to him. You know, like, what are you doing here, buddy? What's going on?
24, move your car.
I'm sorry,
down 24, move your
car.
You got an ID,
my man?
I got a passport on me, I think.
Where's it at?
I think it's on my left side.
You got any weapons on you?
No. Where do you live?
101.
I live in Maywood.
Why are you over there?
Because I was just passing by. I was just on my way
home. Just passing by.
What do you mean you're passing by?
24.
I just dropped off my girl.
You ran from police, right?
Never.
0-2-4.
I didn't. I don't know what's going on. I got tackled. Whatever's going on.
I mean, just a scumbag in society.
And by the way,
he should be charged with murder.
this little village community that was so much talked about, mourning and they're hurting and this and that. Are they mourning and hurting over the 17-year-old that was shot and killed last night, Mike Scott reporting? Was that in the little village?
Mm-hmm. It's nearby.
Are we going to have a conversation about that? 17-year-old girl riding in a car and she catches a stray bullet in the head, dead?
Well, that's the reason why they went after these guys anyway, because gangbangers are just shooting at other gangbangers.
Right.
And cases of mistaken identity are, you know, it's got to stop. It's a war zone. It's ridiculous.
And as we discussed yesterday's show, talking in the context of Dante Wright and the larger issues, including this one, is police resources are devoted to, you know, it's data-driven, where there is the greatest incidence of criminal activity, particularly violent criminal activity. Do you not want that? It's funny. The politicians don't seem to want it, but we know from survey research the residents sure do. The majority of residents in places and neighborhoods like Little Village who are law-abiding, they certainly want police presence. Why should the North Side get protection and they shouldn't get protection? So you can't have it both ways. The police are the problem, so we need to remove them from the neighborhood. But if you remove them from the neighborhood, they say, well, that's racist. Why are you protecting the white people and not the brown people? You know, it'd be nice if there was anybody in this city other than this show and this station who would put this to people, to political leaders. Answer the question. These community leaders, these half-assed community leaders and community activists and professional agitators. Honestly, Tony and Roselle, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I just don't know what to say. Most of the people listening to this show do not deal with the problems down here. I work down here. These communities are plagued by violence. These two are out committing acts of violence, training for acts of violence, and a bad thing, unfortunate incident unfurled. I grew up with gunshots. Can anybody listening imagine laying in bed at 1 a.m. and hearing shots and wondering if someone's dead on the corner? This is a ritual. This is a daily part of their lives. And now we're going to be coming out against the police and foot pursuits. It's I don't even understand what Lori Lightfoot's talking about. It doesn't make any sense. You need to punish people caught with guns illegally. If someone pulls a trigger on a gun and attempts to murder somebody, that's got to be 20 years. There's got to be some kind of minimum sentence now. This is getting insane. The dropping of charges, the non-prosecution of certain things.
They let Ruben Roman go that night. And thought, well, he'll just show up for his court hearing on Friday. And, of course, he didn't show up. And now he's been charged with child endangerment, and they slapped on some other charges, and he's in jail. But
well,
they let him go.
He didn't show up for a previous case.
I know.
Once he got picked up or released. So there was a report that he had other gun charges dropped in the past.
Yes.
So I'm waiting to hear the rap sheet on this guy. You shouldn't be dropping gun charges on people. They dropped charges on a carload of guys in North Riverside a year or two ago. They were all gang members, and the prosecutor said, we believe them. They didn't know the gun was in the glove compartment. We're dropping the charges. The judge was incredulous. It was in the paper, and they just walked away from the case. They had guys with guns in car, and they just let them go.
Thanks for the call, Tony. Yeah, right.
Chain of failures.
It's the same sort of contradiction as, you know, police are bad, but we want police. You don't want police, then, or you don't give us police, then you're racist. The same sort of you know, Hobbesian choice. It applies here. So illegal guns, but then when we catch somebody in possession of a legal gun or committing an act of violence with an illegal gun, then we let them walk or we give them a slap on the wrist, turnstile justice in Cook County. So which is it? I mean, what are you really serious about? And the point is, reconciling these contradictions is, it's all identitarian politics. This is where identitarian politics goes. There's going to be different standards based on your race, different systems of justice based on your race, different attitudes that are acceptable towards police and law enforcement and just the abiding laws in general based on your race. This is where identitarian politics goes, the disintegration of civil society. This is what we've been trying to pound on for years on this show, and this is a manifestation of it. That's the systemic matter that is being manifested here, Lori Lightfoot. Brian in Oak Forest.
Hey, good morning. Happy Friday, guys. I was just looking to see if there was an update on the infant that was shot on Lakeshore last week. You know, I was wondering if Black Lives Matter has conducted their peaceful vigil at Lurie for the kids, or if they're just going to fight for the gangbangers. That's all I got. Bye.
Thanks, Brian.
No, there has been no vigil by BLM outside of Lurie's Children's Hospital.
Bob in Edison Park.
Yeah, guys, I can't understand this. Maybe you or one of your experts you get on there can explain it to me. How could, in the same country, under the same judicial system, same laws, the woman who was shot in Washington, D.C. during the protest at Babbitt, that cop was found, was completely exonerated in record time, and it was forgotten about. Then in this case, you have a kid with a gun being foot chased by an officer. The officer had a split-second decision, and it's national news. And again, the protests are starting. And honestly, I'm not even being facetious. I do not understand the tale of two justice systems in this country.
And the country doesn't even know the officer's name that in the Washington, D.C. shooting.
Questions. No. There's no inquiry about it.
No one cares.
No challenging the decision-making, the judgment call he made. I mean, we've talked about it in this show. We're happy to talk about it again. But, it's just
water under the bridge. Move along.
That's right.
But this officer, I mean, he's with the 10th District again, and everyone that knows him loves him, and they are really feeling for him because watching that video is just heartbreaking. Heartbreaking, because you can see the 13-year-old, he's bleeding through his mouth, and he knows he's dying.
And then
15 seconds, he was gone.
It was interesting, the arguments that were made to justify the Ashley Babbitt shooting. The left-wing pundit saying, hey, she shouldn't have been in the Capitol. Right, she shouldn't have been. She shouldn't have breached the Capitol.
Did she have a weapon?
Yeah, no. But the point is to say, I see. So when you break the law, there are consequences. So if when she tried to breach the door and gets close to the chamber, then that's when the officer that was pointing the gun and standing there opened fire. And then now we talk about the judgment call. But she shouldn't have been there.
She shouldn't have been there. Yep.
Right. That argument from left-wing pundits to justify that officer-involved shooting. And it's completely absent from the discussion with respect to the conduct of Dante Wright or the conduct of Adam Toledo, because it's about race. This is all about this is all identitarian politics. So this is why it's so important to have a colorblind system of justice. And yes, I know historically we haven't, and we've treated, and in this country, black people were treated unfairly, grossly unfairly, savagely. Yes, I get that. I concede the point. We all concede the point. So now you think the remedy for that is to do it the opposite way, is to continue this power struggle. Whatever race is in charge has more political power, gets to impose its will, gets to excuse the conduct of people that have the same race that they don't excuse of people who don't have the same race. That's the system you want. You want to replace one racial order that was awful, that was destructive, that was anathema to the country's founding values, and you with another one. And then we're just going to keep this hamster wheel turning. Whosever race comes up, you're in charge, and you get to do what you want. Okay. That's going to work out. Larry in Elmhurst.
Hey, good morning. Hey, a couple of things. Hey, Amy, the copy will be involved when the handout comes from the city in the lawsuit. And, this is only going to make the cops wait 30 minutes before domestic and anything else. Hopefully, they'll think that hopefully whatever's going on will be ended by the time they get there. You know, it's nonsense. And I hear gunshots all the time where I live. I live across the street from, I can throw my empty beer bottles in the city of Chicago. And I hear gunshots all the time. It doesn't even bother me anymore. And it's just going downhill, man.
Thanks for the call, Larry. Sorry we had you on the munchkin line there.
Yeah.
Jim in Crown Point.
The only two people that failed were the parents of this kid. When I was growing up, there was 15 of us. And the one rule we had was home before dark. There was zero tolerance. I was 9 years old. I stayed out till 6:30. It was dark. My dad took a belt and whipped me good. You don't know how many times he had to whip me with a belt after that? Zero. There was consequences. You don't get married. I mean, you don't get pregnant at 14 and then expect the government to raise your child. That's your responsibility. I had five kids. I use the same rules, the same thing. My kids have far exceeded me. It's the parents, nobody else.
Thanks, Jim. Greg in LaGrange.
Hey, good morning, guys. Yeah, there's so much to unpack here. And the police investigation will take care of itself, but I have to go back again to these leaders that stoke this racial animus and the press that lets them get away with it. They are building a bonfire here they'll never be able to put out. And the fact that you have Mayor Lightfoot in this catch and release process, it's never going to change. Nobody holds them accountable. And if this doesn't change, you're going to build and build the hate and the resentment, and nothing is going to stop it. Let's face it. These Illinois politicians that we have, they deserve to rule vast areas of nothing because they are nothing. They don't care about us. They don't care about the citizenry. And when you look back at everything, who's been in charge of these cities for decades?
Well, decades. Almost a century.
Thanks for the call, Greg. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Their call for unity is a joke.
News.
Important question is not whether you're right or they're right, but why we shouldn't have the right to flip the channel.
Fuels. Opinion.
We have got to stop making it a crime to be a Republican.
News. Opinion. Insight. On AM 560. The Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Another command performance from St. Tony Fauci before House Oversight Subcommittee yesterday. Jim Jordan trying to get an answer from Fauci.
It was awesome.
As to at what vaccination level can we get our liberties back? Now, of course, that starts from a premise I reject, that there's any vaccination level or there's lack of a vaccination level that should suspend our liberties, of course. But his point is well taken. The point he was trying to get to is well taken. And listen to what the chairman of that committee is, Jim Clyburn. You know, Jim Clyburn, who rescued Biden's career, the number three in the House.
Yeah.
Jim Clyburn from South Carolina. Jim Clyburn, who calls the Georgia voting reform laws Jim Crow on steroids, just as Joe Biden does. That Jim Clyburn. Listen to what he set the standard, what standard he set on this matter of restoring our liberties after Jordan and Fauci had a back and forth.
I don't disagree with that. And I understand how serious that is. But I also stand it's pretty serious when businesses have been shut down. People can't go to church. People can't assemble in their own homes with their friends, with their families. People can't go to a loved one's funeral. People can't get to their government, petition their representative to redress their grievances. Right. I also understand the First Amendment's pretty darn important. And it's been a year. And I want to know when Americans will get those First Amendment liberties back.
Well, you just said people cannot assemble in their own homes. They can. That's a CDC recommendation for vaccines.
Not last fall they couldn't.
I didn't hear.
Last fall they couldn't.
I didn't hear what he said.
Well, listen up.
The gentleman's time has expired. I'll give you one instance of when we can get our liberties back. It's when 90%. The members of the United States Congress get vaccinated.
Well, I want to know if that's what Dr. Fauci is. Is it 90%?
That's what
Dr.
I'm.
Fauci? Is it 90%? That's what I'm. That's what I'd like to know. Give us some objective standards versus when certain things get reached, we might be able to get back to having our liberty. When? What are the numbers?
Well, you're going to see a gradual. Right now, we're at an unacceptably high level. We're at, on a daily basis, it's unacceptably high. Regardless of who you are, what you're going to see as more and more people get vaccinated and we get over 3 million people a day, you're going to see the level of infection come down and down, and gradually there will be more flexibility for doing the things that you're talking
Where
about.
Where does it get to? When it comes down, what number do we get our liberties back? Tell me the number.
When 90% of the members of Congress get vaccinated.
But you're not a doctor, Mr. Clyburn. He is. What is the number?
Can't get a number. But Jim Clyburn 90% of the members of Congress, when they get vaccinated, that's the number. Oh, really?
Who set that standard? Who the heck is he to say that?
Jim Clyburn set that standard.
Okay.
But the thing that's so telling about that, oh, this isn't about politics, though. This isn't about politics. Jim Clyburn says we can get our liberties back. And by the way, the whole in-home gatherings, it took the United States Supreme Court to say in-home gatherings for religious purposes in California was okay and should be protected, and any restriction on that is a violation of the First Amendment. It took the Supreme Court to say that, Tony Fauci.
Doctor.
But Clyburn, it's not political. When 90% of members of Congress virtue signal by waving their vaccine cards around, then we can have our liberties back? That's not a ruling class, hyper-politicized approach to disease control, is it? This isn't political. This is all about science and data. This is about medical reality, really. Oh, speaking of the medical reality, did you catch this? Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla said that people who got the two jabs may need a third.
Oh, right, in a year, a booster shot, right?
A potential booster shot would be administered 6 to 12 months after being fully vaccinated. Then he thinks it's possible that people will need to be immunized against coronavirus annually. There are vaccines that are like polio, that one dose is enough, and there are vaccines like the flu that you need every year. Yes, we understand. So now the question becomes, given the perspective of many in the West, we talked about Australia yesterday. Well, wait a second. We can't get our liberties back until not everybody's vaccinated, or whatever Tony Fauci says is the acceptable number of people vaccinated. 6 to 12 months, we got to wait for the third jab. No. Next year, we got to get booster shots in perpetuity. Oh, and by the way, just on this story too, CDC says that 5,800 Americans have contracted COVID-19 after receiving a vaccine, right, and a small percentage, 74 of the 5,800, have died. Another 7% of those 5,800 were hospitalized.
Yeah, it's 0.008% of the people who have been vaccinated that have gotten COVID.
So what? We don't care about the anomalous case. That's the way we make public policy. 5,800 people have been reinfected, according to the CDC, and a small percentage of those 5,800 have died or been hospitalized. So now, do the vaccines work or do they not work? Well, it's interesting because that was another topic. This was brought up by Raja Krishnamoorthy, who's one of the duly elected members of Congress from Illinois, in the infinite wisdom of Northwest suburban Cook County. They sent Raja Krishnamoorthy to Congress, and now the Republican Party, of course, has given up that seat because there's no Republican Party, and he runs unopposed. It's interesting about this guy. I don't know him, but I have a couple of good friends who know him, and they suggest that, you know, he's actually a reasonable guy. He doesn't buy so much of the histrionics of the left. You know what? It doesn't matter because he parrots the histrionics of the left. Listen to what he used his questioning time to discuss. Tucker Carlson. Tucker Carlson, what Tucker Carlson said on his program.
You know, when I was trying to answer the question when you switched over to Dr. Kessler, I'm not an expert enough on what liberty should or should not be encroached.
That's Anthony Fauci carrying on. He asked essentially if Tucker Carlson, his suggestion that vaccines were not effective, if that's unhelpful.
Who's doubting that vaccines were?
And Fauci, we don't have that. And Fauci essentially said that, yes, it's unhelpful, but I don't have time. This is the great thing about Tony Fauci, who's, you know, the biggest media whore in the history of television. I don't have time to deal with the likes of Tucker Carlson. But the premise was that Tucker Carlson said vaccines don't work. And that's not at all what he said. This is another instance of anybody pushing back, anybody asking questions gets slimed and mischaracterized. We talked about that with Dr. Ryan Cole, the pathologist from Idaho this week, who was characterized as an anti-vaxxer. We talked about it yesterday with Alex Berenson, who's characterized as an anti-vaxxer. It's not true in either one of those cases.
Alex's mom got vaccinated.
And now Tucker Carlson is being characterized as an anti-vaxxer. He's denying that vaccines work. Well, here's how Tucker Carlson responded the first time Tony Fauci said that about Tucker Carlson when they were going back and forth, a CNN discussion. Tony Fauci has time for CNN all the time in the world. And that CNN discussion mirrored basically the questioning from Democrats during that House Oversight Subcommittee yesterday. Of course it did.
Who's doubting that vaccines work? For the record, we never for a minute doubted it. We bought all of that stuff completely at face value. We believe in science. Actually, kind of probably trust the pharmaceutical companies a little bit too much. So when they said this stuff works, we never questioned it. We assumed they had detailed studies showing that it does work. We still think that. The only reason we're asking the question is because the people in charge are acting like it doesn't work. You see the president of the United States wearing a mask outside. You see his vice president doing the same thing. You see the guy in charge of coronavirus response, the one you just saw, telling us that, again, after you've had the vaccine, you must remain under the restrictions. So we're asking a question that is rooted in science, which is why? If this stuff works, why can't you live like it works? What are you really telling us here? And by the way, this, again, is not a trick question. We're not playing word games here. What's the answer? If the coronavirus vaccine prevents you from catching the coronavirus, why are you wearing a mask? Why can't you eat in a restaurant? And if it doesn't prevent you from catching the coronavirus, why are we taking it in the first place?
Right.
Such great points.
And it's the same questions we raise. And that's not anti-vaccine. It's not, no. I mean, he's an anti-vaxxer ideologue. It's a bunch of nonsense to characterize that position as such.
Well, why would you get vaccinated if life is going to remain the same as it is right now?
Well, exactly. And this is why Jordan raises the question, okay, what's the standard? Because we know in this world, this imperfect world in which we live in, where trade-offs have to be made, we're, at least adults recognize that. Tony Fauci doesn't seem to, or he pretends not to. Then what is the level? What is the number? These vaccines work and they're effective and you want everybody to get vaccinated. But then some people get reinfected. We may need a booster shot 6 to 12 months. We may need to do a booster shot every year. So then what is the standard by which you green light going out to a restaurant, movie theater, sporting event, et cetera?
Going to school without a mask. I mean, my God. I mean, is there anyone in government who's done more damage to this country than Dr. Fauci? Honestly. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment. Because yesterday we did the WWFD, what would Fauci do? I mean, he loves the media spotlight.
It's just not with Tucker Carlson. He doesn't have time for Tucker Carlson.
Right, okay.
He doesn't have time for anybody who might disagree with him. He goes on all these different podcasts, all these different local shows, but he was not going to go on Tucker Carlson. He's not going to come on this show. He's not going to go on with Prager because they ask questions like Tucker Carlson raised. And then what's Tony Fauci supposed to say? He doesn't have Jim Clyburn to intercede on his behalf when he's, you know, on a show where people have substantive questions like Tucker Carlson just raised. You heard him raise.
All of a sudden, he is selective hearing.
John and Huntley, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call. You know, we're being led by a bunch of ignorant, stupid people. And I point to this latest thing by Biden that what the House is doing, setting up some kind of a panel where Hank Johnson is going to be one of the chief members to look at packing the court. Remember, Hank Johnson is the guy who said or asked the admiral, if we send any more Marines to Guam, we're going to tip the island over.
Mm-hmm.
And this is back three years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've Guam played it 1,000 times on this show.
Right. Guam is just a landmass floating on the surface of the ocean. Yeah, exactly. That's right. Thanks for the call, John. Sorry, didn't mean to cut you off. But
it
yes.
still makes you laugh, though.
But
shows the stupidity of lawmakers.
Well, yeah. So there are
smart.
There are ignoramuses like Hank Johnson, and then there are people that are malicious. They're too smart to pretend that they're dumb, like Fauci. Mike in Plano.
Hey, guys. Dan, you mentioned there's no Republican Party. Well, I have a Republican state rep named David Welter, and I've mentioned him to you before. He's promoting vaccine use as late as yesterday. even though Johnson & Johnson just pulled their vaccine off the market, I believe it was over the weekend. And you also have local members of the sports media here in Chicago that are very angry at the Chicago Cubs because they have several players that are anti-vax or vaccine skeptical, and they're trying to guilt-chain the players into getting vaccines. And this was last week, and just a couple days later is when Johnson & Johnson announced that they're pulling the vaccine. And you didn't hear crickets from these people on that. They say follow science and get the vaccine. So are the people Johnson & Johnson who pulled the vaccine, are they not following science?
Thanks, Mike. Marvin in Burlington.
Good morning. Is it me?
Yep, you. Go ahead, Marvin.
Hey, I'm sorry. My question is, where's the premise of the questioning in the congressional hearing yesterday shouldn't have been about what the percentage is of vaccinated and all that nonsense. The question should be is, who do they think they are as unelected officials to be taking away our rights to begin with? A couple of weeks was supposed to be, then it was going to be a month or two. Well, now it's been over a year, and there's no end in sight to it. These are rights given to us by God, not by the CDC, not by Dr. Fauci, and not by any other blowhard bureaucrat. And when in the hell is American going to get a backbone and wake up and say they're playing us and we've had enough? Where when?
Thanks for the call, Marvin. You know, you're right about the premise, and I referenced that. But I also think Jim Jordan's questioning was useful and instructive, because what he wanted to highlight is that we're living under the rule of Fauci, the whims of Fauci. There is no standard that's set. There is no number. There's his feelings on any pretty given day, or his interpretation of data on any given day. That is not the end of the discussion. That's the beginning of any discussion that is driving the ability to live as a free people.
And Dr. Fauci really acted. He didn't answer the question about gatherings in your home in the fall. He told us to cancel Thanksgiving, cancel Christmas, don't have people in your home.
Frank in Arlington Heights.
Well, good morning. Well, fundamentally, Dr. Fauci is a liar. That's what he is. He's a fundamentally dishonest person. That's what he is. I mean, he's not a saint. We shouldn't be giving him that moniker. He's like one of those
sarcastic.
You know, yeah, I know. But I mean, still, I know. He's like one of those popes from medieval times, like Innocent III, who looted Constantinople. That's what this guy's like. He's a lot more nefarious and malevolent. He's a horrible person.
Thanks for the call, Frank. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, this show isn't for everybody. If you're not interested in the truth, if you're not interested in having a conversation on the merits, then don't listen to this show.
On AM 560.
Because there's no place for you here.
The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Before we get to Chicago FOP President John Catanzaro, and just to provide some context here to all the overheated and ignorant rhetoric that is flying around in response to the Adam Toledo body cam video, the body cam video of his shooting, I want to go back to last summer, because we've been discussing these issues for years, and it spiked last summer with all the violence after George Floyd. A study that was published by Roland Fryer. Roland Fryer is a Harvard economist. He is a black gentleman. His study on policing and police shootings. We didn't find racial differences in officer-involved shootings. Our data come from localities in California, Colorado, Florida, Texas, and Washington State, contain accounts of 1,399 police shootings at civilians between 2000 and 2015. In addition, from Houston, only in those same years, we had reports describing situations in which gunfire may have been justified by department guidelines, but our cops didn't shoot. This is a key piece of data that popular online databases don't include. No matter how we analyze the facts, we found no racial differences in shootings overall in any city in particular or in any subset of the data. I have grappled with these results for years as I witness videos of unmistakable police brutality against black men. How can the data tell a story so different from what we see with our eyes? He goes on to say, our analysis tells us what happens on average. It isn't average when a police officer casually kneels on someone's neck for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, referring to Floyd. Are there racial differences in the most extreme forms of police violence? The Southern boy in me says yes. The economist says we don't know. And he also published a study suggesting that when cops are pulled back, homicides where a black person is the victim increase. So put that in the context of police-involved shootings. Put that in the context of defund police. What somebody's disposition is based on, you know, his lived experience, a popular phrase among the left. And then what a sober analysis of the Harvard Economist finds when looking at the actual real-world data, the case studies. And this is important because what does Mayor Triple Threat go to yesterday in her 15 minutes of sophistry on the topic?
We must continue to face and not ignore the fact that Chicago, as well as way too many parts of our country, has a long legacy of police violence and police misconduct that have left far too many residents, especially those who are black and brown, in a constant state of fear and pain.
And by saying that, she, and not taking, you know, I'm not taking a position on the Adam Toledo shooting, but by saying that, what is the implication? The police are the bad guys.
Right.
And this is something that then reverberates throughout the community. And you have residents saying, what, Amy?
Yeah, just saying that it's open season on our teenage boys, that Chicago police are hunting down our children.
It's scary just to know that, you know, people that are supposed to be protecting us are the ones that are actually killing our kids.
They're killing our kids. That was Madison Martinez. She lives in Little Village neighborhood.
This is how, just to, again, to play this part that you won't hear played, I'm sure, anywhere else. Everybody is, I'm sure, seen the video of the chase and the shooting. This is how the officer who shot Adam Toledo responded immediately after he shot him.
The ambulance got a gunshot victim. Shots fired by the police.
By the policeman, Clark.
Where you shot, man? Where you shot? Stay with me. Stay with me.
All right, 10-4. We'll get an ambulance rolling.
Somebody bring the medical kit now.
Okay, can someone send the medical kit, please? 24th and Sawyer, please. That one over there.
All right, I need a medical kit. Sucking chest wound to the upper chest. Got a sucking chest wound.
I got a medical kit.
Hey, hurry up.
I'm sorry, can I copy you?
I got a medical kit. Where'd you shot at? Right here?
Yeah, top in the chest.
Top in the chest? Give me a chest seal. Where's the chest seal? Give me some gloves.
Chest seal.
Is this chest seal?
Nope.
Yeah, back, vacuum pack.
Chest seal. Chest seal.
Chest seal. Give me a chest seal. Give me a chest seal. Give me a chest seal.
Stay with me. Hey, stay with me.
Hey, stay awake. Stay awake, man.
Put your chest piece, press on. I'm going to start CPR. I'm not feeling a heartbeat.
Go ahead. I'm trying as fast as I can.
I got to get this chest seal first.
As fast as I can. I'm trying to get this chest seal open.
That's somebody hunting down black and brown children, right? For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by John Kent Zara. He is the FOP president in Chicago. John, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Dan and Amy.
Morning. So just because he rendered aid doesn't mean that the shooting was justified. So give us your position on whether or not that shooting was justified.
110% plus it was justified, Dan. And you're right, just because he rendered aid doesn't make it justified, but it sure eliminates the mindset of what a lot of people in this city and country want to paint the police as, monsters. Monsters do not turn on a switch and go from cold-blooded killers to compassionate, you know, life-saving efforts.
Well, tell us what led up to the point where, you know, there was the shot spotter that went off, and just walk us through that.
So the northeast corner, or I actually northwest corner, the 24th and Sawyer, you know, everybody's seen the video of the two offenders walking past the front of the church southbound, and then the shot spotter goes off. They were standing on that northwest corner as a black vehicle had driven past. They fire 8 rounds at that vehicle, and then you see him fleeing back north up Sawyer. Shell casings were recovered from the grass where the two subjects are seen standing on that corner. shooting at the vehicle. You cannot see in the video who's shooting, which one of them, but it came from one of the two. They both flee northbound up Sawyer. The police are 6 or 7 blocks away at that time. They get the alert on the phone. They decide they're going over there. It's right up the street. Nobody else is out at 2:40 in the morning, except two shadowy figures in the dark. They give chase. And tragically, this is the way it ends up. But I said it that day because I was on scene. 8/10 of a second, and it's not to be violent. It's just to demonstrate the simple thing someone can understand. You can slap an average human being in the face without them reacting in more time than that officer had to decide whether that gun was still in his hand or not.
And so, yeah, and so on the justification, you know, develop that a little bit more, because, yes, so he throws the gun behind the fence and he turns. Why shouldn't an officer wait to see what he has or doesn't have when he turns as he's raising his hands?
Because we have no obligation to be shot at or killed before we return fire. It's just the simple reality in life. Illinois statutes dictate we have the ability to use deadly force, as does any citizen theoretically in that same situation. This isn't just a police issue. If anybody had encountered that same situation, they would have been justified in shooting him. You don't have to wait to be shot at or even shot to say, I'm going to defend my life. There's no humanly possible way you can stop yourself from committing to taking that shot as a subject that you fully believe still has a gun in his hand is turning around and facing you.
Right, and it's important to note, again, he did say drop it, so he believed, rightly so, that Adam Toledo was in possession of a gun. And so, and again, not to be redundant, but just for emphasis, because this is what people are going to say, ultimately, and people are saying, ultimately he had his hands up. Mm-hmm. So why not wait to make sure that he still has the gun, that he didn't discard the gun as he's turning around? Don't you have time? You've got your gun trained on him. He's got his back to you. Now he's turning to you with his hands going up. Why can't you wait?
Well, a couple things there. You talked about the mindset of the officer who was responding to a call of shots fired, 8 rounds, and they got to the scene about 90 seconds after that shot spotter went off. So you show up in an area that does have a gang issue. You know shots are fired. You see two subjects. This is all a totality of a situation that an officer is taking into consideration. Then you come around the block, down the alley, and you encounter two subjects, and they'll take off running. First subject stops pretty quickly. Okay, great. You continue on. You follow the next subject. The next subject running down the alley, you can clearly see is grabbing something on his right side of his body as he's running. This all elevates the fear and the concern level for the officer as you're pursuing the subject. As you enter a fence line, you don't know that he's stopping to give up, no matter how many directions you're giving him and telling him. You don't know if he's turning and shooting at you or he's going to surrender. You just don't. And you don't have to wait to see which is which if you don't have the time. Now, if another 2 seconds had kicked off, it'd be a different story. But this was literally 8/10 of a second. There is no humanly possible way that your mind can tell your finger to not pull that trigger once you decided you were going to protect yourself. It's just not reasonable.
Yeah, 842 milliseconds between gun in the hand and when the shot was fired. So it's literally, I mean.
And,
yeah.
Well, also, you know, the reality is he did fire one shot. Most of our training consists of two shots reassess. He didn't shoot him a second time because by that time he had registered that there was no gun in his hand. So, again, this officer's tactical response was absolutely amazing, how clear he saw the incident go down.
Let me ask you,
most officers would have shot more than once.
Let me ask you what Adam Toledo should have done. I mean, for instructive purposes, in addition to not fleeing, in addition to not being out at 2:30 a.m. with a gun and so on and so forth. But in that moment when the officer has him cornered and, he's calling for him to surrender, should he have just put his hands up with his back towards the officer so he could have seen? What should Adam Toledo have done?
Well, I mean, You could Monday morning quarterback it all day long, but
well, I'm just
reality. Yeah. I mean, logic would dictate. Sure, if he had just dropped the gun and just stopped running with his hands up backwards, sure, there'd be less of a threat concern for the officer. It's much harder to shoot somebody as you're running away. Not impossible, because as we saw in the Home Depot video, that poor security guard got shot as the offender reached behind himself and shot him in the head. So again, there's no 100% answer to any of it, but his odds would have definitely increased had he just stopped running, dropped the gun, and put his hands up without turning around.
Now, how is Officer Eric Stillman doing, and have you spoken with him?
I have. I spoke with him the morning of the incident. I spoke with him several times since. I spoke with him yesterday a couple times. I could just tell you, he was pretty troubled by the gravity of the situation and the reality, no matter how justified, that a young kid was taken from this world. And again, this isn't to dance on Adam Toledo's grave by any stretch of the imagination, but the kid made some tragic decisions in life that cost him his life, unfortunately. But that doesn't mean the officer's a monster, and it doesn't mean the officer's not human enough to digest that such a young kid is no longer with us and that he had a part in ending that life. It's something he's going to deal with and wrestle with for the rest of his life. Nobody hardly ever takes that into consideration, including the mayor, who was talking about how unbelievably troubling these videos are to watch. And blah. Well, they didn't watch it. They lived it. The officers that helped, you know, respond to that scene lived that scene and watched his last moments. Those are visuals they're going to have with them for the rest of their life. But who cares? Tough luck. It's part of the job. Well, that's what PTSD is, in part. Those kind of memories that you can't get out of your mind. So, you know, we're going to do everything we can to support him, his family, and help him get through this, no matter how long it takes.
Lightfoot also had some comments on foot pursuits during her press conference yesterday, seeming to indicate she's not much of a fan of them, directing Superintendent Brown to offer some recommendations on foot pursuits. Seems like she's opposed to foot pursuits because it puts both the officer and the subject in harm's and bystanders in harm's way. What's your reaction to her, position on foot pursuits?
Well, why don't she eliminate the protection on her block too? Open it all up. I mean, you want to let everybody have free reign in the city? Get rid of the detail on your house. Start with that. I mean, it's ludicrous. It's actually stupid. It's not even ludicrous to even suggest that foot pursuits need to end. We recover thousands, 8,000 plus, I think, last year guns we recovered in the city of Chicago. How do you think those guns are recovered? They're not just dropping them off for a gift card or a donut. There's actually police work involved in much of that stuff. You're talking about the most violent big city in America who has a crime problem worse than number one or two city combined, and you want to basically hand over the keys even more to the city than the state, the state legislator down in Springfield, our state's attorney. I mean, it's just ridiculous to even talk about this. You can't chase in a car. They drive away. You got to let them drive away. You know, there's a part of House Bill 3653. If you can reasonably, expect to be able to apprehend a subject at a later date, you can't give chase. Where does this stop? I mean, do you actually have to witness a murder in order to chase somebody? Going forward, it's just stupid.
All right, John, for the third time this year, downtown has been boarded up. There's a march tonight. It starts at Logan Square Park at 5:30. They're going to march over to Lightfoot's house. What are the rules of engagement for this coming weekend?
Well, the department put out a pretty lengthy 57-page report, directive on everybody's expected response and job duties, which was one of the more well-written and thought-out things that they've done in quite a long time. As long as they're peaceful, the police are not going to interrupt anything they do. That's the directive that's overriding all of this. I will say it's pretty troubling, though, if you want to talk about the police response. A police commander in charge of men and women of this police department put out an email letting officers know in a certain unit that if an officer, if you are on a stationary post, a fixed post somewhere, and you hear a 10-1, you are to stay on your fixed post. An officer is calling for help, and he is telling them that they cannot go to an officer calling for help. That is a commander of this police department. He is derelict in his duty. He should be removed from his duty immediately. This whole mindset of we can't take action is just bizarre, but it's even worse when it's coming from within.
Speaking of dereliction of duty, the Cook County Prosecutor's Office isn't helping you at all by making material misstatements in court about this video that the Cook County State Attorney's Office is now walking back. So on the one hand, they're not doing a very good job, per Kim Fox's ideology, of prosecuting criminals, criminal conduct. On the other hand, when they are moving to prosecute criminal conduct, they make a material misrepresentation that sort of people can take as, you know, they're trying to cover up or mischaracterize what we see on that video.
Well, I don't think anybody who follows city and county politics is the least bit surprised that our illustrious state attorney walked back and threw one of her prosecutors under the bus because it doesn't fit the agenda of, you know, catering to the criminals. You know, County Board President Preckwinkle basically did the same thing, blaming the police. Yet another. I mean, just clueless politician who will pander for any votes possible. And they wonder why this even county is the way it is. I don't even know what to say about Kim Fox anymore. She's a disgrace to the profession, and especially to her position. And the reality, the sad reality is, I have no idea when many of the residents who live in the most violent areas of this city and county are going to wake up and stop electing the people who are helping cause that very violence in their neighborhoods and making them a prisoner in their own homes, because that's exactly what happened last year.
John Catanzaro, president of Chicago FOP. John, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. Have a safe weekend.
Thanks, you too. And he joined us on our turnkey .pro answer line.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosing. This is Chicago's morning answer on AM 560. The answer. This is Chicago's morning answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. We played some clips from Project Veritas's latest undercover action. CNN technical producer Charlie Chester is the star of this feature. The clips from a couple of days ago, how he talked about how CNN got Trump out, climate change is their next, item on their agenda,
Fear taking sells. Down Congressman Gates.
Fear sells, right? Take down Congressman Gates was another one of it, his utterances. And again, it's not to take a position on the Gates matter. It's just to take a position on the quality of journalism, in quotation marks, you're getting from CNN per somebody who's inside the castle. Charlie Chester, in the latest clip, talks about hype up the so-called Stop Asian Hate movement and how some of the facts are not helping, because at the same time they're trying to foment discord, racial discord with respect to crimes against Asian Americans, they're trying to also, of course, advance the agenda of Black Lives Matter, and this is becoming a bit complicated.
I was trying to do some research on, like, the Asian hate, like, you know, the people are getting attacked on. A bunch of black men that have been attacking Asian men. So I'm like, what are you doing? Like, we're trying to, like, help, like, with the BLM, and, like, we're gonna, like, I mean, it's individuals, it's not a people, you know? That's not good. The optics of that are not good. These little things like that are enough to set back movements, you know. Because the far left will start to latch on and create a story of, like, criminalizing an entire people, you know. Just easier headlines that way, I guess. I don't know.
So you're saying that the far left would label a whole genre of people? I kind of miss your point.
that, like, not the conservatives, I'm sorry, not the far left, but I've noticed that, like, you'll get headlines that, you know, might lump people together as opposed to focusing on the individual. I mean, that's what Trump ended up doing with, like, the China virus.
Right. It's very confusing to be an identitarian. On the one hand, he's worried about individuals being held responsible for their action versus just characterizing a group based on the conduct of one individual who happens to share their race, for example. That's what he's saying is how it should be with respect to any crimes against Asians committed by a black person. Because he really needs those crimes to be committed by white people. So that advances their narrative. On the other hand, it's Trump, for example, who was doing the identitarian casting a whole people based on their identity by characterizing COVID-19 as the China virus, when, of course, he's talking about Chinese communists. He's talking about the government. He's not talking about Chinese people. Of course, we know this. But I just find it fascinating. One, this is how you stop a movement. Right. He's part of the movement, CNN technical producer. Two is the whole basis of the movement, the identitarian movement, including Black Lives Matter, is based on group identity, not individual responsibility or conduct. These are confusing times, particularly for so-called journalists. For more on the topic, we're pleased to be joined by our friend Brett Baer. Of course, he is the host of Special Report, weekdays, 5 p.m. Chicago time. Brett, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good morning.
Morning. Yeah, I mean, I guess this is not anything we don't know through other Project Veritas videos, and not just limited to CNN, but big tech companies as well. But I mean, I just your, I guess, take on the state of journalism as it seems to continue to descend into being part of movements rather than, you know, reporting the news and presenting context so that people can make sense of the world around them.
Yeah, I don't think we need this technical director to tell us, you know, some of these things. It's evident by the editorial decisions CNN makes and doesn't make. And sometimes the doesn't make is also a big part of it. And, you know, I think that some of this stuff was assumed that it's happening because it's pretty much every show getting that kind of a kind of order, it seems, and he's just illuminating from behind the scenes. I think a lot of people know this. You know, a lot of people who I talk to who are news consumers believe that there are fewer and fewer places that they think that they can get a fair shake of a story. And as I've always told you guys, I mean, I'm trying to be that place. A Special Report is trying to be that.
Do we lose
every day? We strive to do that.
Okay. Well, and to that point, I mean, not to beat this drum, but I mean, you know, it's one thing when somebody like me says it's another thing when somebody who's actually the purveyor of it says it. That's just helpful. The other thing we see this week is this Swiss billionaire who is making a bid for the Chicago Tribune, and we find some backstory here. He's part of this effort called the Hub to gather up news outlets for the purposes of being part of a movement, like Mr. Chester said. And so, I mean, to your point about the uniqueness of your position, I mean, you're not the only one, but I don't think you're the majority either of trying to play it down the straight down the middle and let people make up their own minds when presented with contextual and consequential information. But it's disturbing to see more of this happening and you know, this leftist billionaire seeming to want to do that with the Tribune. If it hasn't already been done, at least on the news side anyway.
Yeah, I think that is part of the problem, is that people are looking for places that they can say, okay, I get this. This is coming to me straight, and I can decide what I think about it. And, you know, it's not that way in a number of different outlets. And I'm not saying that our opinion shows don't obviously just really hit hard what the opinion they want to put out there. They do. But there's very, very few places that give you both sides.
Well, there's very few places, too, and which is one of the reasons I like Special Report. When you report the news, you want to have a roundtable discussion of it, great. But you put people with different viewpoints side by side, and then people can, you know, make assessments based on the quality of the arguments that one side of the issue is making versus another side. There's just very few places that are like that anymore. I mean, I grew up, you grew up with Crossfire, Capital Gang, and they're part entertainment, of course. But at least you got different ideas presented side by side, different policy recommendations presented side by side, and then people had to do intellectual battle, and that's good for the viewer.
I agree, and I think we have more diverse voices on Fox than other networks do. And you know, listen, when I watch a panel and it's about negative to Trump, and they're supposed to be a balanced panel, and it's Bill Kristol and Jennifer Rubin and, you know, and somebody else who's really over the top against all things Trump administration. I think, you know, that's just not a fair battle. And I think more and more people expect a little bit more fairness. But listen, we as a country have got to get our heads around trying to get to the heart of matters and listen to each other. It's so insane that we talk past each other all the time. And in order for us to make anything work in Washington, we got to listen.
Well, I mean, but it's hard, though. I mean, today I'm watching CNN this morning, 100 days since the Capitol insurrection. They keep this story going and going. How much more is there to do on the Capitol attacks?
Yeah, I mean, they see a benefit to that, I think, obviously, politically. The story's not over. They're still trying to find different people around that. But, you know, I had a conversation with a congressman who was at the shooting at the ballpark that Scalise was shot at.
Oh, yeah.
Remember, that shooter was had allegiances to Bernie Sanders. He really liked Bernie Sanders. He was kind of far left. He was out to target Republicans. He lives in a van next to the ball field to target Republicans for a month. The only reason any of those people are alive is because Steve Scalise happened to be at that practice with his Capitol Police security, who end up taking him down once the police get there. But point being is that in the wake of all of that, that was not the focus, right? And people don't remember. Like, they remember January 6th, obviously, in these images and TV, and it was horrific. But they don't remember June 14th. It's Flag Day, but it's also the day that these people almost all died. And it was definitely political. And I think that it's just interesting how we look at different events.
Yeah, and how they're covered and by different outlets, right. Getting to some other political matters, Nancy Pelosi says she is not a supporter of increasing the number of justices on the Supreme Court. She's really walking a tight line here, isn't she? She's trying to keep her majority, which is a tall order, while still sort of serving the more transformative oriented elements of her caucus.
I don't think she's saying that she's not for it. I think she's saying she wants to wait until the study, the commission that President Biden put in motion, finishes its recommendations. And so she's not going to put a bill forward before that. Listen, this kind of is the camel's nose under the tent. You remember when, you know, Obamacare was like, you know, this is the beginning of the effort to do government-run health care. And people would deny, no, this is not it. Oh, it does seem like this is kind of putting this into the bloodstream so that the commission can come out and say, we do not recommend 4 justices added, but we do recommend, you know, limiting term limits for judges or some other recommendation that somehow enables the turnover of seats in the Supreme Court. And that's what it feels like. It as a bill right now, it's not going anywhere.
Well, do you think that then perhaps that she's conceding that she's taking a walk anyway, that the Democrats will lose the House next year, and so let's get everything done that we can get done, including on this topic?
I think that there are some people who believe that and that they want to plow ahead, but they're going to run into Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin. And, there's going to be a lot of pressure on them, but I think at least now they said they're going to hold the line.
Good. I mean, even Ruth Bader Ginsburg said she didn't want that.
Yeah, she said keep it at 9. 9's a good number. And listen, Joe Biden vehemently said when FDR did it, it was a bonehead idea. I don't think the idea changed much, but we'll see how this commission comes out, and I bet they're going to come up with a different recommendation.
There are different boneheads to be served now, I suppose. When Joe Biden gave this big speech about Afghan troop withdrawal this week, and the upshot, it seems to me, was barely newsworthy other than to say that he is going to abide the deal that was negotiated in the previous administration. That seemed to be lost in this. So this is Joe Biden sort of being reported as this is Joe Biden's idea. He's going to end the nation's longest war. And then sort of midway through that speech, yeah, I'm going to do what the Trump administration negotiated, full faith and credit of the U.S. government and all.
Yeah. You know, I remember Trump and the administration wanted them out by May 1st, and Biden was not going to meet that deadline. But again, this gets to coverage, right? If you go back to when the Trump administration was talking about that, the Taliban deal and the May 1st deadline, it was all headlines about irresponsible and reckless and, puts the country in jeopardy. Now the headlines are, it's time. He's going to end a generation worth of war.
Right. Right.
This is the bold decision, blah, 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 blah. So it is the coverage of it. I do think that there are legitimate concerns about what the Afghan government is and how it can or cannot defend itself. And some small, quick reaction forces, what some people were fighting for, is not going to be there.
Well, right. No, General Petraeus, as opposed to this, and he was given profile when it was the Trump administration moving it, when it's Biden doing it now. General who? Who's David Petraeus?
Yeah.
Brett Baer, Fox News anchor, special report, 5 p.m. Chicago time during the week, best-selling author of 3 Days at the Brink, FDR's Daring Gamble to Win WW2. Brett, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and the question I posed before Mike Scott's News Bros broadcast. Would you encourage a loved one, your son, daughter, brother, sister, to become a police officer today? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636-DA, turnkey.pro text line. So far this year to April 12th, 52 black people have been fatally shot by police, just 3 of whom were unarmed. 109 white people suffered the same fate, 5 of whom were unarmed. Is that open season on black Americans, white Americans, or Americans who are running afoul of the law? And not really open season, it's very surgical and very specific. We've talked about this, ad nauseum. I want to go back to something that Heather McDonald said in a recent talk that she gave for the Center for the American Experiment on victimization data, black versus white, shootings, black versus white. So what the police are facing writ large, these are macro statistics.
Here are the victimization data. Nationwide, blacks between the ages of 10 and 43 die of homicide at 13 times the rate of whites, according to the CDC. In Minnesota, blacks of all ages die of homicide at 12 times the rate of whites. You might think that the Black Lives Matter activists would care about such loss of black life, but you would be wrong. They ignore those black deaths because the victims are killed overwhelmingly not by the police, not by whites, but by other blacks. Here are the criminal offending data. In the 75 largest U.S. counties, which is where most of the population resides, blacks constitute around 60% of all murder and robbery defendants, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, though they are only 15% of the population in those counties. Nationwide, blacks commit homicide at 8 times the rate of whites and Hispanics combined. In Chicago, blacks commit about 80% of all shootings and homicides, though they are less than a third of the population. Whites commit about 2% of all shootings and homicides in Chicago, though they, too, are less than a third of the population.
Hmm. And it turns out, and by the way, the reason this data is important, and I know data can only take you so far, is because it continues to be repeated. Misinformed data continues to be repeated. I saw the other day on Hannity's program, Jerry Rivers talking about blacks being shot at twice the rate of their representation in the populace at large.
No, it's actually twice as many whites are being shot by police.
Well, right.
Than African Americans.
But it's also the wrong analysis. You don't look at it based on demographics, like what percentage of the population is black, Latino, white. You look at it based on criminal activity. And on that score, per Roland Fryer that we mentioned, his study from Harvard that we mentioned in our conversation with John Catanzaro, there's just no evidence of any disproportionate racial targeting by police in this country. There's no evidence of it. There's sensationalized cases that have the nation's attention wrapped because of the media's focus. But if you actually look at it, it's not the case. And, you know, one thing we didn't get to with Catanzaro that I might suggest, too, is that FOP needs to hire some comms people. I know the job is policing and not public relations, but public relations is a part of it. And until and unless you have people with platforms in addition to ours and a handful of others actually having this conversation that is evidence-based, it's going to be increasingly difficult for police and demagogic politicians like Triple Threat will win the day with her characterization of police, with policing policies that actually put those very people she purports to represent at greater harm. You're just not going to get to a sensible place, and it's going to be more dangerous in these neighborhoods that are beset by violent crime and more dangerous for police officers who are trying to protect law-abiding residents from violent crime. It's just none of this makes any sense. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Jim in Chicago.
Hey, how you doing? Nice to talk to you. You're hitting right on it. These people are all well-credentialed. She went to the best colleges. She's got her degrees. But she just spewed venom yesterday. It's all emotional. She wanted one hand, yes, we need to stop the gun violence and do all of that. And 2 minutes later, in her same speech, she's saying, we need to stop the foot pursuit policy because someone got hurt doing it. Well, the cop was actually doing what you want them to do.
Right.
There's a gun, go after it. Put yourself in them shoes for a second. And then she just hangs them out to dry. She brought up legacy and generational poverty. What does she think? Everyone who popped into the city came from some other country and brought a bag of wealth with them that very few people do. And the poverty was a part of everybody I know's family. But all their logic and her pedigree and her degree, she just talked herself in a circle. It was just blather.
Thanks for the call, Jim.
Yeah, sprackled, or, you know, along with it, some crocodile tears, too.
Amy, you have two young men that you're raising. I know one is going to be the chef at a 3-star Michelin-rated restaurant. And
of course.
What if Peyton or Eli came to you and said, you know, Mom, I think I want to go into law enforcement?
I would hold my breath for a second. And I, you know what? I would let them do it, though, if that's what they wanted to do. But I would worry every second of every day for their safety.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, asking if somebody wants to volunteer for the draft.
Right.
These days, it seems to me. And it's not just because policing is a dangerous job. It may be even less about policing being a dangerous job than police being demonized as a matter of course. I mean, I don't know. Joe in Franklin Park.
you know, I'd have my kids doing it in a heartbeat if they passed two very simple laws that would help them. Number one, if you run from the police, automatic year in jail. Number two, if you commit a crime with a gun, automatic 20 years in jail. Why don't we pass that and let's sit back and watch crime drop dramatically? Oh, as long as Miss Fox would prosecute that, though.
Mm. Thanks for the
call.
Our
jails would be packed.
Joe. Jordan in Antioch.
Good morning, guys. Hey, so just a little devil's advocate. After I called in yesterday morning, I talked to a couple people on my route that had heard me on the radio. And here's the flip side to that, to the stats that you report, that they were reporting about black crime versus whites committing crime and everything else. Those statistics are gathered from racist police departments, and it's our white privilege is the reason that our crimes aren't reported, and it's lopsided.
Okay.
I couldn't even respond. I just stood there and looked at him like,
yeah.
Like,
well,
it was like the jet commercial. My head was going to explode into a purple cloud.
Well, it's but Jordan, that's such a great anecdote because it tells you I don't know anything. I don't know anything.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And I can't refute what you're saying. So I'm just going to imagine something. I'm going to conjure up a conspiracy theory. The problem, of course, with that person's statement, in addition to that fact it has no evidentiary basis, is that this is data gathered by Harvard economists like Roland Fryer, I mentioned. It's data gathered by the Department of Justice, including when the Department of Justice is under the stewardship of a Democrat regime, Democrat presidential administration.
And that was my argument to that, my rebuttal to that. And their return on that was the fact that it's not the agencies that are at fault. It's they're gathering it. The statistics are coming from the racist police departments, the actual data, because you can't I don't have enough breadcrumbs to get back from where
exactly.
I started with this person.
No, I
but
get it.
It was, you can't collect data if there's no data there when the police are allowing you to commit crimes due to your white privilege.
thanks for the culture. Well, that's a society governed by feelings rather than facts. I mean, and that's our society. We're a sentimentalist society, which is why so many institutions have delegitimized themselves, are not performing the functions that they're charged to perform. And this is why, the fabric is tearing, is because you have people like the guy that Jordan was interacting with that just refuse to confront. It's just, I've been, indoctrinated to say everything is racist. Everything is racist. Every position that runs counter to a bunch of cultural Marxists and the politicians and the media that serve them is racist. Okay. We're not going to have a very productive conversation if I present evidence and you just reject it out of hand and you just make this abstract appeal to racism. Okay. Then where do you want to go? Okay, fine. All right. Then you tell me which is the agency that should gather this information. And by the way, it speaks to what I was saying before about the need for more education from the police departments or from anybody that has standing, including, by the way, let's not forget Chicago. Half of the Chicago police force is black or Latino.
Yep.
You think they're participating in a conspiracy to murder black and brown kids or people generally? But we need to hear from black and brown police officers, not just in Chicago, but around the country.
And the officer, Eric Stallman, his partner, she's African-American woman. And I don't know, I watched all the video and she did not leave his side. She was holding him because you can see their shadow against the fence and he's crying. And she's like, I'm here. I got you. And it was really, really just touching.
Right. It was. I mean, he was clearly distraught. But again, so where are those voices? We have to hear from black police officers, from Latino police officers, from Asian police officers. We need to hear from them. We need to hear from black police chiefs and black and Latino minority mayors around the country and community leaders to say, let's pump the brakes a little bit and let's understand what is and what is not happening.
Well, I was pleased that Charles Ramsey, his former deputy police chief here in Chicago, was up for the superintendent's job. Former Washington, D.C. chief of police. And he said, as tragic as it was, the shooting was reasonable.
In my opinion, tragic as it was, the shooting was reasonable. And here's what I saw. There is a video that shows the young man and an adult, who is the 21-year-old, walking down a street together. Now, this is at 2:40 in the morning, 2:40 a.m., 13-year-old on the street with a 21-year-old at 2:40 in the morning. There's another shot that shows them walking down a street, and then they turn. You see a car going down the street. You can see the taillights. They turn toward the street. And then you hear a succession of shots, probably 7 or 8 shots. Those are the shots the shot spotter picked up. In addition to that, I listened to 911.
By the way, that shot's fired.
So, and then he just went on to say, you know, he had a gun in his hand. And again, it was 842 milliseconds between when he saw the gun and when the officer fired his shot.
And Charles Ramsey is an African-American gentleman.
Yep.
But we need to hear more. And Superintendent Brown, I know he's handcuffed.
Where is he?
To some extent, pun intended, by Lori Lightfoot and the ideology that grips the city of Chicago. Well, that ideology that grips the city of Chicago not only is depriving people of opportunity, per Lori Lightfoot, not only is fomenting households where there is not the proper parental oversight, but it's also resulting in a more violent place where more people are being hurt or killed. Again, I mean, 173 murders and nearly 1,000 shootings already this year, mid-April in Chicago. Susie on the north side.
Hi. You know what? There's a video out with a woman that's standing behind a podium. She's in her 80s, and she grew up in Austria. And it's called Don't Give Up Your Guns. Everything that happened there in the 40s is happening here. And they voted Hitler in because they were so desperate with high crime. Police couldn't do anything. He offered free health care and free schooling, and everybody ended up paying 70 cents on the dollar. Please look it up. Everything that happened there is happening here. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Susie. Mike in Hammond.
Yeah. Good morning, guys.
Morning.
Hey, my oldest son spent his whole life wanting to be a soldier and a policeman. He went to Purdue, got his degree in criminal justice, went and joined the Marine Corps. That's all he wanted to do. He came out under all the circumstance we have today, and he said, nope, I'm not going to be a cop. I'm going to go be an electrician. He just got back from the Marines within the last few months. Nope, not going to be a cop.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's what Chicago is talking about. It's Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. In a recent Prager University video, the segment PragerU does called Stories About Us, a Hollywood actress named Samaire Armstrong weighed in on the identitarian oppression that is afoot in Hollywood at present. Take a listen. She was an actress. I guess she was in The O.C., some other things I haven't seen. But anyway, her perspective.
Over the last 6 years, I've heard nonstop, they're not looking for white. It's going to diverse. They liked you, but you're white. And, you know, I kept that to myself in silence because on the one hand, it's like, hooray, like, great, diversity is finally here. Oscars were so white for decades, you know? But the pendulum has swung so far. I think nowadays it's different for the sake of being different because it's politically correct. You know, like, we're going to fit this transgender character in here now that we're PC. Natural, organic stories stopped being told, and you had to make a checklist of what was acceptable. You know, all the nuances of art disappeared, and shouldn't it be about talent? Shouldn't it be about merit or capability or effective storytelling or emotional presence? You gotta wonder, what's the point of acting school and putting this time into developing the craft if that doesn't matter anymore?
We like you, but you're white. And even when you do have conservative minorities produce artistic work, films and documentaries, it's a fight, isn't it? We've seen that, our friends Shelby and Eli Steele, with the fight they got in with Amazon over What Killed Michael Brown, their documentary. We've seen that with our friend Larry Elder and his film. We've seen that with the Clarence Thomas documentary being taken down, the biographical documentary on Clarence Thomas being taken down during Black History Month, taken down from Amazon. So even if there is, and I'm sure there are, Black or Latino, John Milius is out there, Orson Welles is out there, can they get any work in Hollywood? Can they get any financing so that they can produce great art? Well, let's put that question to our friend Christian Toto. He's the editor of Hollywood in Toto, that's T-O-T-O, hollywoodintoto.com, and he just did a very interesting piece for realclearinvestigations.com on this very topic. Christian, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
No problem.
The remarks from Samir Armstrong and what you heard me talking about in terms of even if you have talented minority filmmakers and screenwriters and so forth, can they get work? Can they get financing in Hollywood? That seems to be an open question that you somewhat explored in your piece at realclearinvestigations.com.
Yeah, it's a case-by-case basis. It's not easy. And even when you think you've reached it, there are new obstacles along the way, which you mentioned with some of the documentaries, and that's what's most frustrating about it. It's bad enough that people have to work around the existing system, and they're kind of losing out on sort of resources and, all the media apparatus that traditional filmmakers have. Then they kind of come up against these new obstacles. It's like, you can't win, but, a lot of filmmakers are trying, they are having some success, and it can be done. It's just really hard.
We talked to the gentleman who produced the Clarence Thomas film Created Equal, Michael Pack, and he that was taken down during Black History Month, and I mentioned, and Justin Folk, who produced Safe Spaces along with Dennis Prager, and I thought Folk had something interesting that I'm sure is applicable to these other filmmakers who struggle to get their films on the streaming services and general attention so people can consume them. Justin Folk said that in one they couldn't get into the Telluride Festival with no safe spaces. In one case, a major distributor actually admitted to us that they think our film is a winner, but they can't get behind it because Dennis Prager is in it. Oh, yes, Dennis Prager, this firebrand rabbi, that radical Dennis Prager. I mean, it's just so remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, you could find someone on the ideological left who is maybe similar to Dennis Prager, and you know that he or she would not cause a ripple of a problem within the Hollywood community. Or you could have people who are far more toxic, like an Alec Baldwin, and you get him in your film, and all of a sudden it's a selling point, as opposed to, my gosh, you know what Alec Baldwin has done for like the last 20 years and all the sort of the skirmishes with the law and all the things he said? He should have been canceled 20 years ago, but he's not. So it's what is the landscape of Hollywood. And those are some really good documentaries, by the way. I think in the past there may have been right-of-center films where maybe the filmmaking was a little rough and the budget was microscopic. But, a lot of the films we're talking about are good films, are high-quality films. They're well-produced. They're handsomely put together. And there's no reason why people shouldn't see it. But sometimes it's a problem.
But Hollywood's never going to change their mind, are they?
Not at the moment. I don't see it in the foreseeable future. And I think what's going to go on right now is you're going to see some alternate platforms developing. The Daily Wire has gotten into this, and some others are coming soon where, hey, we are our own distribution platform. Come to us. We'll put out the content that can't get accepted elsewhere. And we'll have to see if the market will support these efforts. I hope so. I think it's good for in a lot of ways. And it's also it's good for Hollywood. I think that the more competition, the better. They should be pressured with projects that maybe challenge their groupthink and maybe would force them to raise their game.
And it's not just Hollywood. I mean, in terms of TV and film, I was talking to a friend of mine who has friends that are songwriters. It's a husband and wife team. And he was saying, you know, they want to get out of L.A., but there's nowhere they can go and still work. Even if they went to Nashville, it's the same culture. And the song, and so the songs they write, the work they do, it's always his wife's name that is the lead. She gets the credit because if it was a duo, if it even includes a white male, then there's really no chance. A white female has enough problems, but you throw in a white male, and then you're DOA.
Interesting story in the Hollywood Reporter this week. They had an executive from ABC talking about how they passed on several new scripts, new shows for the network because they weren't diverse enough. There was one show with a white family. I said, well, that's a no-go. Well, then I saw it, and I actually wrote about this on my website yesterday. What about Modern Family? That show was a white family. There were some, there were a few Latino members of it, but that show
one in particular that helped sell that show.
Right.
Modern Family. I'm sorry, Miss Vergara. I think you got to get her on the screen.
But if you went by the new rules that ABC has in place, and I checked this out, as far as diversity, 50% of the cast must be diverse or from underrepresented groups. The show wouldn't make it on the air. It'd be a squeaker, but it wouldn't make it on the air. So you wouldn't have 11 seasons of a really good show.
Well, so you mentioned like and this is what Andrew Klavan, who's a great writer, screenwriter, and essentially gave up his career in Hollywood to become to come out as a conservative and to write books and to do podcasts and so forth. And he's great, but he's always, we're always talking about building our own castles. You can't expect your ideological adversaries to provide aid and comfort to you to promote your work. But the problem becomes, how do you get wide distribution? You don't just have to have your own platform for production and to some extent distribution, but if you don't create a streaming service that has critical mass a la Netflix or an Amazon or a Hulu, then, how do you make it make economic sense to, produce this work?
Well, it gets even worse than that. Look at when the movie Unplanned came out a couple years ago, Twitter temporarily banned its account. There's big tech influences that are trying to stymie all these different content that's out there. So it's what you said is absolutely true, but it's even more complicated and even more troublesome than that because of what Amazon does, because of what Twitter does, because of what Instagram does. They're all sort of in the same boat where they can put pressure on projects they don't like. So even if you kind of defy all the odds and you make your movie and you reach the masses, well, sorry. You've got to deal with more issues as well.
Well, right. And if you're used to say, well, okay, conservatives, you don't speak out. Don't let anybody know you're a conservative. But your work product is going to be informed by your value system, the stories that you want to tell and from the perspective that you want to tell them. And maybe for an actor, it's a little bit different, although I think there are complications there. But if you're on the production side as a screenwriter or a director, it's going to be, it's very, maybe Christopher Nolan can get away with some sort of, pro-American sentiment in the context of Batman or something like this, but it's going to be pretty narrow.
Yeah, listen, if you want to pitch a story that has themes that have those influences in them, good luck. Where's the story about Venezuelans suffering with their oppressive socialist government? I'm sure there are countless harrowing and dramatic and wonderful stories to tell, maybe heroism and in the face of hardships, that kind of a thing. But those stories will not get greenlit. I don't know who would even attempt to pitch them because it's not the worldview. And I think that the John Voights and the Christopher Nolans of the world are really the exceptions. John Voight's a great actor and he's steadily employed and he's an open conservative. Yeah, but I don't think there are many John Voights out there. It's just one. He's a great actor, but he's the guy who can speak up because he's got the body of work behind him and the talent.
Yeah, right. Well, so your piece is how conservative filmmakers are starting to fight back, and you gave the example of sort of like the Daily Wire platform, and that obviously the work product there, from what I've seen, needs to greatly improve on the film side if that's going to be viable. But are there other examples that provide some hope that there's avenues for conservatives of any race, gender, that want to that path that they can pursue?
Well, there was something called Criado. I think that's the way you pronounce it. It's a budding new streaming service. I think Nick Searcy may be attached in some capacity. I need to double check that. Also, there's something called Lore TV, L-O-O-R TV. That is coming soon as well. Angel Studios is a spinoff of VidAngel, and they're getting into the sort of producing shows, distributing shows. There's a crowdfunding element to it, but they've had success with The Chosen, a really good faith-based show, which is now in season two. So it is coming, but again, you know, so many obstacles in their way. Do they have enough cash? So, you know, it's a gargantuan task facing them. But you know what? It's roughly half the country who is not being actively engaged, and there's a big market out there. So if it's done properly and it kind of can fly through all the different hoops, I think it can be successful.
And is it hard to find funding?
You know, I think it is. I mean, I think people on the left are very generous when it comes to donating towards content and Hollywood-type fare. I think that people on the right traditionally have been, you know, giving to candidates and giving to think tanks and giving to, you know, different organizations. It's sort of a more traditional outlook while the culture is being, you know, basically handed over to people left of center.
Yeah, that's a huge issue, is right. Conservatives that do have resources seeding programs in the arts and projects in the arts. Absolutely. That's a good point, too. Christian Toto, he is the editor of HollywoodInToto.com. That's T-O-T-O, HollywoodInToto.com. Also, check out his Real Clear Investigations piece, Denied Equal Opportunity in the American Place, Conservative Filmmakers Start to Fight Back. Christian, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch. And it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open mic Friday!
Yeah, Open Mic Friday, taking your calls, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line with your comments, criticisms, constructive policy ideas, general crack pottery. We'll take it all. But I begin.
Oh, yes. And then when you're done, I have something to get off my chest.
I want to begin with something positive and upbeat. This is, I have a couple stories, actually. But first, the story that went unreported, been trying to get to this week, unreported by us and underreported generally, and you'll understand why in a moment. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld the state of Ohio's 2017 ban on abortions for children with Down syndrome. Sixth Circuit upheld that ban. And we've talked about that issue before. And Ohio is very enlightened to pass such legislation. The Sixth Circuit is very enlightened to ratify the constitutionality of that legislation. And that leads me to a reminder of the wonderful things that people with disabilities can do. John Cronin and his father, Mark Cronin. John Cronin is the gentleman with Down syndrome, and he's an entrepreneur. He founded John's Crazy Socks. And he unveiled his award-winning business with a couple of congressmen in tow. And here's how that went.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming. We are, you want to introduce us?
Yes, I'm John. This is my partner, my dad, Mark. We are John's Crazy Socks.
Hey. And what's our mission?
Our mission is spread happiness.
And we have two wonderful guests here today. Who's to your right?
Tom Suozzi.
Congressman Tom Suozzi.
And Andrew Garbarino.
Andrew Garbarino. And thank you guys for coming down.
Thank you.
Seeing what it is we do here, seeing how we employ people with different abilities. But today we're here focused on a new initiative. What is that, John?
We are here. All the employees. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. You don't say you're sorry. We're introducing our Unity Socks. And these Unity Socks are a symbol of how we can all come together as Americans. The idea is to bring all Americans together because we have much more in common than we do what separates us. We come from different backgrounds. We have different points of view. But what binds us is a belief in the promise of America. And we believe in that.
johnscrazysocks.com if you want to order a pair of those Unity socks or the other offerings from John Cronin and his dad, Mark, and their John's Crazy Socks business. And that's speaking sweet. Of, what's that?
That's not really sweet.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And speaking of that, you know, people are coming from all different places and sharing American values. Another great story, quickly, then I'll turn it over to you, Amy. Yannette Lopez is the cafeteria manager at Deer Creek Prairie Vale Elementary School in Edmond, Oklahoma. She is an immigrant from Cuba who moved to Edmond from Houston for better employment opportunities. She said, when I was a child, I have a dream, like, say, Martin Luther King, right? My dream was to come here to this great country. Well, she recently passed her citizenship test, and this is how she was received at the elementary school where she's the cafeteria manager by the staff and teachers and students, kids alike. So they lined the halls and gave her, you know, applause, and that's she started awesome. Chanting USA, which I don't know if is allowed in too many K through 12 systems anymore these days. So welcome, Yannette Lopez from Cuba to Houston and then to Edmond, Oklahoma. Welcome, Yannette Lopez.
Thank you.
What the Cronins were talking about.
That's awesome. Well, no, I don't feel like after those feel good stories, I don't want to go back to doom and gloom.
Well, you're always doom and gloom, and I'm always sunshine. That's how it is. That's how this works.
Exactly. Well, after Adam Toledo's video was released, do you know Alderman Rodriguez by any chance? What he said about, you know, if Adam was somebody else, he'd still be alive. Meaning if Adam was white, he wouldn't have gotten shot.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the socialists who've been elected to the city council.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
If Adam's last name was Rittenhouse, he may be with us here today instead of his last name being Toledo. I think in the name of our community, in the name of Adam, we seek justice and we seek peace.
Mm-hmm. I'm just grateful that, you know, they had about 20 protesters last night. That was it. And it was peaceful. And, you know, we still boarded up for the third time in a year getting ready for violence. But tonight there's a meeting at Logan Square Park, and they're going to parade from there to Mayor Lightfoot's house because they want her to resign.
Well, it's going to be more dicey this weekend, I suspect, because you'll have the professional agitators to send on Chicago to try and whip people into doing stupid things. So we'll see. Hopefully that's not the case, but we've seen this play out before. All right, Christy in Crystal Lake, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hi, hey, here. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
I just wanted to call in and shed light on what's going on in the suburbs. Our school systems, a lot of them are back in school full-time with a day off on Wednesdays. And although they're already back, after being shuffled around every couple of months, they change how our children's education is being delivered to them. So these kids have to get used to changes that are occurring probably once on an average, like once every 2 months. They just get used to it, and then they change it again. So the kids went back to school. They were back for a week and a half, and then there was someone else got sick in a classroom. Now, they're going to school masked, just so you know, masked, and they've got half the students are at home on remote. So the people that chose to go back to school are back in school, and then one breakout happens. One kid gets it, and they sent home every student in every single class that kid was
ridiculous.
In.
It's just so stupid.
But here's the thing. The front door, they stopped taking their temperatures on the way in because it takes too long, right? So it's like some of the rules they follow, some of the rules they don't follow, but this is one they're going to choose to follow to send all those kids home a week after they've got back there.
It's just teachers don't want to teach. I mean, teachers' unions have been harder on kids than the actual coronavirus itself.
Corey in Lake Mills, Wisconsin.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for all you do. I have concerns about the good people in Rock Ridge.
Rock Ridge.
Right, Rock Ridge. You know, the story of Rock Ridge, when they had their problems with the rebels and the governor, and how they had to have help from the blacks, and they accepted the blacks, but not the Irish. And soon the Irish are going to want their reparations. What are we going to do for them?
All right. Thanks for the call, Corey. Mike in the North Loop. Hey, Mike.
Mike, you're on.
This is Raphael.
Oh.
Well, hi, Raphael.
Mike, often confused. Sorry, Raphael. Go ahead.
Okay. I'm in the North Loop. Anyway, hi, Dan and Amy.
Good. Hi. How are you?
I know this is not going to be popular. No one is saying this because it's not politically correct, but I'm going to say it. The protesters are saying that Adam Toledo complied with the police officer's commands, and they're asking what more he could have done. So I'll tell them what he could have done. He could have not been on the streets at 2:40 in the morning with a gun. How about that? And then Crazy Lori says that we failed him. No, we didn't fail him. His mother failed him. She didn't supervise him. She didn't even report him missing at the time. So let's put the blame where it belongs. And as for Duante Wright, it is a tragedy that anybody gets shot when it's not necessary. But I think in this case, the cop who shot him deserves a medal for cleaning up the vermin from the streets. He was nothing but a punk. He robbed a woman at gunpoint. He thumbed his nose at the courts by failing to show up for his hearing. And then when he's caught, he resisted arrest. He blew every second chance that he was given. I have no sympathy for him whatsoever.
All right.
That's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Raphael. What about that? That's been underreported, this idea that there was a missing persons report on Adam Toledo for some time before.
Yeah.
He was missing for some time before the report was filed.
Yeah, he was missing, and then he came back home. So he was gone for about 48 hours, came back home, and then went missing again. And he didn't have any identification on him. That's why it took police 2 days to determine who he was. But his mom had not filed a missing persons report for the second time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And it was spring break, so
well,
I don't know if,
no.
I mean,
yeah.
That was a week of spring break.
Well, spring break, does the kid just run the streets? Your 13-year-old just runs the streets for days on end?
No, I wouldn't let that happen.
Right.
Nor would you with your hypothetical children.
No, that's right. Valerie in St. Louis.
Hi, I just wanted to make a note that yesterday was CWB Chicago's 8th anniversary,
Yeah. And
so wanted to express my gratitude to them. And also, I believe the Second City Cop blog went offline at the inauguration or soon after.
Right, there were some.
And I just wanted to, put out there that they are still missed. They were amazing, and if anybody associated with them is out there, you know, they're not forgotten.
Thanks for the call, Valerie. So CWB, Chicago, for those not following the site or following it on Twitter, you should. It's great content on crime in Chicago. Great content on crime in Chicago. Mm-hmm. Second City Cop. I think actually Second City Cop chose to take his blog down because he was afraid of being outed or something.
Hmm.
I think that's what happened, but I'm not positive on that. Rich in Indian Head Park.
Yes, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. The mayor keeps saying that she failed Adam. Well, I think she failed. She's failing the whole city because there's shootings every day by gangs. BLM doesn't say anything about that. They don't protest that. But yet all we hear is that there should be changes. Amy, if you remember back in 2014 with the Michael Brown case, you were on the radio with Big John.
Mm-hmm.
And they were calling for changes. Every time there's an incident, they want changes. They want demands. Well, they wanted demands in Ferguson. And the one I called in, and the one demand that I wanted was that if you show a little respect to the law enforcement, there wouldn't have to be a problem. And I thought that then, and I think that now. They need to show a little more respect to the police, and they wouldn't have these problems. And I'm just wondering, what do you think about that? They're always blaming the police, but they never put any blame on the people that are involved in these incidents.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Appreciate it. Have a good weekend. Will and Skokie.
Hey, how you doing? I don't know if you caught it, but the recent thing on Fox where that Dan Bongino and Geraldo Rivera went at it with each other.
Yeah, I mentioned it. Yeah,
right.
And it was unwatchable.
The point to remember there to watch it is that the points that Geraldo was making were all emotional. The points that Bongino were making were experiential. And that's what the journalist mindset is. It's all about get the story out there. But the best way to get the story out there is to make it emotional. If it bleeds, it leads. And I think that's one of the things that we're running into, even with, you know, honest journalists as opposed to biased journalists, they tend to focus on the emotion as opposed to the reality of what happens. And you know, Bongino has the experiential, you know, background to do this. Also, Geraldo, you know, he's bringing out statistics that are not statistically valid because he kept saying, oh, well, this is number of deaths per capita as opposed to straight. And you don't do that with statistics because per capita doesn't apply to this. So, again, it's crosstalk and people talking from two different positions, two different mindsets, the emotional versus the, I don't want to say rational, but the experiential, the people who actually know the stuff.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Will. Appreciate it. Yeah, so Geraldo, with respect to the Dante Wright shooting, suggested that cops should be should put their sidearms in their weak side and the tasers in their dominant side so that they, when they reach for the taser first instinctively. And among a lot of caterwauling and nonsense, it was not a particularly productive conversation or a good interview, frankly. But Bongino made the point that, oh, by the way, you don't need to have any experience to make, which is, among other problems with that, number one, you're talking about an anomalous event, that sort of accident. Number two, if you put the sidearm in your weak side, then you have to cross over to pull your sidearm, and it actually gives a potential assailant easier access to your gun than you have if you were a police officer being attacked. So that doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of officer safety. So anyway, but the larger point about emotional versus experiential or emotional versus evidentiary is a salient one. It's the salient one. Brad in the West Loop.
Yeah, morning, guys. Just wanted to keep it a little more lighthearted for Friday, and since it's weekends, people are looking for movies, and you're talking about movie platforms earlier in the hour. There's a really good platform called PureFlix.com, and there's a local director, Robert Alanis, who's had a few really good, under-the-radar, lighthearted, faith-based films called Heavens to Betsy, and that includes Jim O'Hare from Parks and Recreation. He plays a pastor. So you can find those. I'm not sure if it's on PureFlix anymore, but it is on Amazon Prime. And, you know, so support your local artist. He's been around for 10, 15 years making a lot of these lighthearted movies, including Larry Thomas, the Soup Nazi, is also in a few of his films.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
PureFlix.com.
So Robert.
And what's his name?
The director's name is Robert Alanis. The movies are Heavens to Betsy and Heavens to Betsy 2. With Jim O'Hare and Karen Lesowitz, who's a really good local actress who starred in that.
All right. Thanks, Brad. We'll check that out. Appreciate it.
What is it?
Chuck and Delavan to close it out.
Oh, real quick. That's a
Salem. Hey, how you doing?
Oh, wait, real quick. Chuck. Salem Now app is where you can go. Salem Now app.
For PureFlix.com,
yes.
Or for that director's content? PureFlix.com, I guess Salem Now
for
app.
For content.
Yeah, okay. All right, thanks for the call. Chuck, go ahead, close us out.
Hey, they overturned Evers up here. He has no power to do anything, so I'm glad for that. And I'm going to be the next governor of Wisconsin. I'm going to run as a Democrat, and I'm going to primary this guy.
Really?
And then I'm going to take and get him indicted for conspiring with your governor down there when he shut us down the first time. I think everybody will vote for me. Go pick some daffodils for your girlfriends today. They're out, and enjoy the weekend.
Thanks for the call, Chuck. All right, Tony Evers' political obituary has been written by Chuck from Delavan. Excellent.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.